What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west. B. Mitch holding it down in the Navy Yard Studios. I'm out in Ashburn as week five gets going. Commanders versus Tennessee Titans. Good morning, Brian. How do you do?
I'm good, brother. How you doing? How you doing out there? It's a little drizzly out there. I was wondering about you, and as I drove in, I'm like, how is JP going to get this thing done today? And
we are good to go. We are good to go. Check your phone. We're good to go.
All right. Let's check you out and see. I was worried about you a little bit, brother.
We are good to go. Appreciate it. it's going to be an interesting week out here because there is obviously a lot of pressure on this team to get a dub.
JP, what's going on? You better look at the backstory on that. I don't know.
Now, it's an interesting week for the Commanders as they gear up for you're such a pain in my butt. As they gear up for the Tennessee Titans. Titans have won two in a row. Commanders 1-3, kind of reeling, if we're being frank. And you know what I've been thinking about, B?
Yo.
I can't help but think if we had to identify, oh my gosh, I just got this tweet from Hyperbolic Take Commander. And when you put it in this context of a guy that's won, I believe he's won at least one MVP award. He's won a Super Bowl, been to two Super Bowls. I think, you know, you could split hairs and pick a few different people, but I think at this point you would say Patrick Mahomes is either the best quarterback in the NFL or one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Sound right?
Hell yeah.
The last time the Commanders won a playoff game, Mahomes was in fourth grade.
How old is he now? 28? 26, 27, something like that?
Old enough to have been starting in the NFL for 5 years and won a Super Bowl and won an MVP.
Wow.
Wow, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
That makes
I
it.
I mean, you put that.
although it really doesn't make a difference, but it does put things into perspective and let you know how damn long stuff is. Because, like, he rolled out of fourth grade, went to high school, got to the league, and has become what we have been looking for 20 plus years. In a matter of 5 years.
I'd say argue longer than that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. So, man, when you put it in that kind of perspective, it really becomes more apparent the lack of success, you know, of success that really matters, postseason success out here for the Commanders. And, you know, it's going to be a really tricky year, I believe. If you had to identify one thing, B, one thing you have to identify that is a weakness for this team this year.
Uh-huh.
Through four games, what would you say it is?
You say through four games, what would I say is the weakness?
Yeah.
I'm going to say I have two of them, and I think they work kind of together. Superior talent in key positions. I don't think anyone is superior on the offensive line. And I think even when you look at this league, how it is, and you look at your secondary, we talked so much about the linebackers in the offseason, you don't see superior talent there either. But the thing that kills it is depth. We don't have much of that. So when someone goes down, you have a hell of a drop-off, dude.
Totally. And you know what I couldn't help but think about? Like, we're talking about the offensive line problems, right? And particularly, I think Trey Turner has been...
He's been as good really as you and I at guard. Yes, it sounds like a joke, but, you know, every time you tell me you play guard or something, I say, yeah, you play guard and tackle. As you guard the right. Water and tackle, everybody got close to it. He's been worse than that. And I think that's a problem when that's someone that you go out and you get and you don't have no urgency to get him on the field practicing. And then when he starts to play, you go, what the hell did you give him time off for?
Well, and B, I can't help but think about this. Do you remember how skewed the statistics were during Brandon Scherff's time here, where how good they were with him on the field and how bad they were without him on the field?
100, yeah.
Like, if you and I know those numbers, and who knows, because clearly, you know, when Martin Mayhew decided to go public last year at the Combine with the contract offer the year before to Brandon, clearly they weren't going to offer him again, right? Yeah. Like, obviously that ship had sailed when they decided to go public with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about, all right, the offensive line's a really big struggle right now. Last year they had Scherff, and then there's an obvious step down to what they have now. Obviously.
Maybe two of
Scherff
them.
Scherff was the first all-pro they had since you were playing. Right? Like,
damn, that's a long damn time, dude.
Yeah. That's a long damn time. And then go back two more years, and there's a million layers of context required to discuss the Trent Williams situation with this team.
Mm-hmm.
They traded Trent away for a third.
You traded Trent for a third, and you are
and I'm acknowledging how much was involved.
Yeah, I know a lot was involved, but you may give up two twos for somebody else. Oh, okay. I'm just listening.
At least a second and a third.
Yeah, probably two twos, too, if we don't take our advice. But I understand where you're coming from, Jay.
I'm just like, We sit here and we try to analyze the offensive line troubles. Think about what they've lost in the last three off seasons.
Yeah. You lost a perennial Pro Bowler. You lost a guy who was an All-Pro since I had a mustache and a little fade.
Right. You were wearing Sergio Tacchini.
Hell yeah. You lost a guy that walked in here and was the best center since Jeff Bostic. Because he got hurt last year, and then this year he's hurt again.
Right.
And that is a left tackle, a right guard who nobody act like they wanted, but the dude was unbelievable. A center who's probably, listen, I know somebody said yesterday the center's the second. I think the center may call more calls than the quarterback. So as far as getting the play going, the center might be more important than the damn quarterback, because if he don't get the schemes and stuff going the right way, the quarterback has no success.
B, I think Trent Williams, when his career's over, could honestly go to the Hall of Fame, especially if the Niners are able to win a Super Bowl while he's out there. Like, if that resume can get a little more decorated, I think he has a chance at Canton.
Uh-huh.
But Maybe he doesn't.
I think he is, because one thing that we're always concerned about is public perception in this area. We always worry about what the public thinks about our team, our players. Trent Williams has that level of respect all around. When we turn on those games on the countdown shows and all, they're talking about perennial Pro Bowler, future Hall of Famer, best offensive tackle in the game. That's what they're saying about Trent Williams.
I think when it comes to Scherff, there's probably maybe close to a 50-50 split if he's the best guard in the NFL between him and Quentin Nelson of the Colts. But you're talking about either the first or the second best player at his position in the NFL.
Yeah.
That you let leave. And at best, you're going to get a compensatory third for it next year, assuming you don't sign other people back. Right? Like, that's how... It's a math formula. I'm no mathematician, but it's a simple math formula to get you there.
Uh-huh.
Trent Williams, outside of Jerry Jones, literally he's the only one that keeps hyping up the guy in Dallas that's perpetually hurt. You talk to people on or off record in the NFL about Trent Williams, and he's the best left tackle in football.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no debate.
And you know who tells you that the most? The guys that play against him.
Totally. And so just think about the Trent situation was obviously a mess. Perhaps it could have been salvaged. Perhaps it couldn't. They traded him away.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it boils down to that. They traded him away. Then you still had Sheriff, and they love pointing to last year's offensive line, the ranked sixth or seventh based on Pro Football Focus analytics. Well, don't you think Brandon Sheriff was a huge part of that?
Sheriff was probably the major part of it, because what I noticed last year is when Sheriff was hurt, they did not run the ball like they did when he was not. So you change, and we always talk about changing an offense. They changed the whole offense when Brandon Sheriff went out the game. That showed his importance right there.
Since Ron Rivera took over in 2020, Sheriff missed three games in 2020, and I believe he missed five games last year. I'm almost positive they lost all of those games. And that's not to say they didn't lose some games with him in the lineup, but they were far better when he was playing than when he wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like the talent evaluation process that put this offensive line together. And I know there are injuries, and that's a huge part of it. But injuries happen to every offensive line across the league always.
They do.
And I was just thinking about this. The last few tackles that have gone into the Hall of Fame, I want to say it's Baselli, Ogden, and maybe Orlando Pace. Does that sound right to you?
And I think took Baselli a while, but.
Yeah, and I think Baselli is because.
Pace and Ogden, they walked in.
They were first ballot, no question.
Yeah.
But my point in naming all three of them, and Baselli, his career was cut short due to injuries, but he played at a really high level for Jacksonville. I know Ogden. And I know Baselli, and I believe Pace, and maybe I need to look it up. But at least Ogden and Baselli played their entire careers with one organization.
Yeah.
And I don't think it takes a lot of debate to wonder why. Because when you get a Hall of Fame left tackle, you keep them.
Yeah.
No matter what.
You don't let them go.
And listen, Trent maybe wanted to leave. The medical situation was obviously a mess.
You've been around it long enough, and I think many people try to say what they want about that incident, but you've been around and covered football long enough. The moment a player loses faith in the medical staff, they are not trusting them any damn more. That right there may be more important in football than trusting your coach. Your coach can put you in a position that you can still overcome it, or you can do what you know is going to work, like I used to do. But when a person is messing with your health and telling you lies about your health, you can't see past that. That's the worst thing that can happen in all sports.
Totally. Hell, that happens in regular people's lives where they don't trust their doctor or they don't trust the nurse or whatever it is.
But remember, as a player, you're in touch with doctors and stuff way more often than probably the average person, because it's so your health is so intricate, so important to your actual job. So you're with people, your trainers daily, the assistant trainers, the doctors come in, you go to specialists. So you have a little knowledge of some things a little bit better than the other person. Most people that are not in professional sport, they just take whatever the doctor says. And for a long time, that's what the players did too. But then when players started to get a little bit more knowledgeable, and then you get other players teaching those players, now when I know you are telling me a lie to my face, and I'm like, you sure about that? And they keep, oh, yeah, that's no problem. That's when you really have an issue.
It's remarkable to think. We could talk about, I think John Matsko is one of the best tactician, and I mean, this guy's been an offensive line coach in the league for a long time. I think he knows what he's doing. I don't think there's a ton of surprises that he knows what he's doing. But I think ultimately.
But he's not a magician.
You're right. The talent assembled is the talent assembled. And when you go from, dude, on a really basic level, Jacksonville got rid of Andrew Norwell to bring in Brandon Scherff. Just look at it. The two of them basically changed spots.
Yeah, think about that. One team stepped up, one team stepped down. That's basically what happened. When you go around the league and you look at the rankings, I guarantee you Brandon Scherff was up there in the rankings and Norwell wasn't.
Right.
And we felt because he's familiar with the coach and he's familiar with the offense per se, he's going to be better. B.S. Either you're talented enough to be better or you're not.
And maybe that's coming. Maybe there is some real validity to playing yourself into shape. I think with Turner, you know, that obviously wasn't happening. Perhaps it was because of the quad injury. Perhaps it was because of a lot of other reasons. Who knows? But we sit here and we talk about these offensive line problems, and we've been talking about it really since I'd say the first half of the Detroit game, definitely the Eagles game. We saw it again in the Cowboys game. I don't think Carson Wentz makes it easy on the O-line either. I know that the folks I talked to inside the Colts organization said that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you also got to consider the exodus of talent. B, looking at this roster, who do you think lands in the top three at their position across the NFL?
At the roster,
Allen and I love Payne, but if you're going to talk top three interior defensive linemen in the league, I mean, that list starts with Donald. I don't think those guys land on it.
I don't think any of them do. But I that's why I never look at just the top three. I look at more or less, give me the top 16. That's half of the league. If you're in the top half of the league at a position, then you're a damn good player. But when you want to start talking about exceptional – out this world, you got to go like top 10 or higher. And sure. I don't think anybody does.
I was thinking about this. It's kind of weird to say I was thinking of Tress Way in the shower, but I was this idea was being kicked around in my head all morning.
Just tell us the idea was in your head. Don't tell us where you were and why.
You can make an honest case that the only dude that cracks the top three at their position is the punter. And the ideal punter is on the field.
He may be number one because he's a
– Sure.
Based off of my experiences, the fact that he has so much hang time and he's left-footed, which is rare in the league, Tress has an advantage over most. And he's damn good at his job. And he's a cool dude, too.
No argument. And I think – but you don't want your punter to be your best player, obviously.
Yeah. Unless he's your quarterback, like Stephen A. Smith said.
Or Sammy Baugh, punter and quarterback, but that was 100 years ago, 75 years ago. Tom Tupa, hell of a player.
See, Tom was a punter, then he became a quarterback. Well, no, he was a quarterback, then he became a punter because he wasn't that good at quarterback.
Doug Flutie kicked some punts, those drop kicks.
Yeah. Yeah, he's scared to go in a race car, though. But go ahead.
Again, my greater point here is that you've had an exodus of talent on the offensive line. Talent, we talk about the investments in the defensive line and how the defensive line should be their strength because they took all these first-round picks.
Yeah.
Granted, you're going a little further back in the calendar, but Trent and Scherff were also first-round picks of this organization.
True.
That panned out.
That's the funny thing where –
I think Trent was the ninth overall pick. He wasn't even the first tackle pick.
The first-rounders that have panned out end up getting out. And the ones that don't, we waste a lot of time with them. Not a good thing.
We wonder why the O-line is struggling so much, and we're all kind of forgetting that they had Scherff and let him go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's – here's one guy that does not make poor decisions when it comes to major financial transactions. His name is John Leahy, and as interest rates are going up and houses are starting to sit on the market, you need an expert. You need somebody who knows what they're doing, somebody who will sell your house fast despite changing market conditions. That someone is John Leahy.
Yep, and when you're looking for a person like John, someone's going to come in and make you do one of the most, I guess, the most important investments in your life. You want to make sure a guy has a great guarantee and great track record. Just like Natalie and her family, they need to sell their Rockville home urgently. They interviewed multiple agents, but chose John and his team because of the guarantees they offer and their great track record. Their confidence was not misplaced because in only 7 days, the home sold over the asking price at $585,000, giving them much relief. We're talking about John Leahy and the Fine Living Group of eXp Realty. You know, John, we talk about him all the time, about how great he is. The guy is absolutely amazing. You know, he's the same things he does, like, out there in his everyday life. When he gets into his business, he's the same way. He doesn't change. John offers you flexible fees also, customized to your needs, and he understands that life happens. So if needed, he will let you out of your contract at any time.
Those are just a few of the reasons I would trust John Leahy to sell my house. But if you listen to this radio program, you know I'm about numbers and I'm about cash. John Leahy will help you with both. On average, he sells homes for 5.59% more than other agents. That means if you sell your house for $650,000, you're going to make an extra $35,000 in your pocket. Call John today. Do not delay. 301-900-3052. Check him out at johnleahy.com. Or what's even easier, you can just Google John Leahy and start packing. 1999. Jeff doesn't think this song would get people going bonkers in the club. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. 11 o'clock, Nikki Jobvala from the Washington Post will join us. B, did you hear in the Junks? Landville, see if you can track this down. It was in the last block of the Junks right before we came on. EB was teasing that he thinks there could be another Dan story dropping soon.
I did hear something. They were talking about something in there. I heard them listening back on it. That, you know, but I think there was a person who said something about, ain't nothing happening.
We'll see, but I do think this. I do think this. It's not an accident. Dan decided to make his public return to the sight lines with Jerry in Dallas, and the team posted a picture of it.
Yeah, the dude that supports you the most and has probably the biggest say in the league, if he's on your side, that's a good thing. You know what I'm saying?
And I think, listen, I mean, we've seen the Post story last week, 2 weeks ago maybe, saying, you know, there's more owners getting frustrated with Dan, and you got some owners giving anonymous quotes saying we want him out and we got to go to him and convince him to sell and all
when
this
they
stuff.
When they do those quotes open, then I'll believe them. But, you know, a few months back, there was somebody who came out and said the exact same thing. Probably the same person, because when you have a bone to pick and you're the one that feels that way, you can keep saying it. So if I got two people saying it and you need 24, what does it really say?
B, even if they went from three people that said it to six people that said it, you're still 18 away.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, I do think the situation in Phoenix could turn the pressure up with Robert Sarver deciding to sell his Phoenix Suns and the WNBA team there. I do think, you know, I was listening to the Junks earlier this morning, and they had Lavero on, and he said there are, I can't remember, six or seven. I mean, there's a ton of pending investigations against Dan. Mm-hmm. You've got Congress, the Federal Trade Commission, the NFL, which I believe is the Mary Jo White investigation into the allegations Tiffany Johnston made in front of Congress. I think Maryland, D.C., and Virginia are checking him out because of the season ticket holder stuff. So there's a lot that could happen, and maybe one of those reveals too much.
But I asked a question about the season ticket stuff. I don't care who's looking at that. That's more of a problem with the NFL than anybody else, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the state of Virginia decided that its citizens were wronged and money was taken in this season ticket holder deposit allegation, the state of Virginia or D.C. or Maryland or wherever the hell, I imagine if you got enough season ticket holders in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, they might care. Like, I imagine they could bring suit or fine or something, but I don't think I think a lot of this is like political, trying to get a political win than it is you know, expecting much to change. But Landfill, I believe, has the audio from EB this morning, and I found this curious when I heard it live. Go ahead and play that if you can, Landini.
I'm trying to nail down some details on this, Lurch.
Yeah.
But I've been kind of whispering with the boys about this, but I'm hearing some rumblings that there's going to be another story that's going to break here on the Commanders.
Yeah, you were saying that last break.
I'm trying to get more updates on it, but somebody that I trust very much
so. What kind of story?
I don't want to speculate, but I have a feeling it's another round of like details on all the Snyder stuff.
The sexual
harassment
stuff.
That's what I'm guessing. I don't know. I don't know for sure.
But it was told to you that it was a big story?
I was told that, like, yeah, it's going to be a big story.
Can you read? Don't
no,
tell me.
No, I don't want to read it.
No, don't tell me who it is. Just
I know.
Read
I don't
it.
Even want to read it because it might give away details about it. Oh. But I'm telling you, I think something's going to break it soon. I think something's going to break soon. That's the vibe I'm getting, and I'm trying to find out more details.
Obviously, that's interesting.
It's interesting, but this is the question I ask, and this is why I thought this is my want-to-be-an-investigator mindset. If something breaks and it all happens around the exact same time, I think a lot of people are going to just pile it into the same stuff. But if it's something that happened closer to now or something, I think, not involved or totally opposite of all that other stuff, I think that is more damning than something that pops up from the exact same era. Because I think the farther you get from the era of what was going on, I think people start to, like what Roger Goodell said, where things are different now and we find them and this, that, and the other. But if things get farther, I think people look at that. The dude in Phoenix was still doing stuff as of last year. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and this ain't taking nobody's side. It's just that I try to think out the mind of a judge, a lawyer, whatever. Like, okay, the same thing happened. Give me, I'd say, a 10-year period from whatever to whatever. And, yes, you still got to take it serious. But they look at it like, why is this story just coming out when it was all there already? Like, eventually, just like I've seen a lot of people do, the person releasing the stories that they've been holding on to, they start to feel like that's kind of that's damning to them too. Why are you holding on something just to promote yourself? Get the story out. Get the serious stuff out so you can find out what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, totally. But who knows? We don't, like, you know, getting enough information to go to print with something has a lot of hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
It's one more thing in what seems like if something does come out, if there is a new story, it'll be really interesting to juxtapose that with Dan making his first public appearance with Jerry last weekend.
Oh yeah.
And you and I like to focus on the field, and I think that's what we're going to do now, kind of going forward here.
Seriously,
I think we do a good job of not being reactionary and not living and dying with every game because we recognize it's a long season.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee coming to town. At noon, we're going to talk to Jim Wyatt, who has covered the Titans since their inception. This guy knows everything there is to know about. Hell, he covered the Tennessee Oilers when they first came to town. They're riding a two-game win streak. Brian, we haven't been able to, we're back in business with the phones, which is awesome, so we can kind of interact with all our callers that tried to call yesterday.
Yeah, we missed
and it. We did. If we need to, maybe we can circle back and track down that kind of Wentz-Heineke-Howell debate we were having yesterday. But it all kind of dovetails, because are we getting to a last stand for the Commanders type of situation?
Like, is it called code red or code orange? Which one is it?
Whatever you want to call it.
I think it's a code something, because 1-4 and making it to where you want to go, the odds of doing that are slim to none. And I think 1-4 is damning at a point when I understand we can talk about now. We can talk about the mistakes. It's your players making the mistakes. We can talk about the penalties. It's your team making the penalties. We talk about the injuries. Well, you decided to go very easy in practice, and then finally when you got the season started, you started going. But if you go 1-4, nobody wants to hear excuses at that point. They want to hear solutions. You go 1-4, you have a lot of damn questions popping up and a lot of people starting to discuss it. So this is damn near a must win. And I know people always say, oh, they don't. Okay. Look at who was 1-4 and went made it to the playoffs.
It gets really, really hard to do. Mm-hmm. It's not to say it can't be done, but it gets really, really hard to do.
And we always go by analytics and stats, don't we? And the stats tell you 1-4 is basically a no-no.
Gets very, very hard. And then if you get, I mean, you could kind of extrapolate now, even though there's a 17th game, just 1-3 to 16 games gets you to 4-12. Like, it's not that hard to paint that picture.
Mm-hmm.
4-12, and people can talk about, you know, maybe Dan doesn't have the money or Dan doesn't want to spend the money or whatever. It's pretty hard to keep a staff together that goes 4-12. And I don't know. I'm still not entirely sure I see that, because you got Bears, Texans, Falcons. I mean, there's a lot of what you would think are winnable games. But those other teams are looking over here and saying, yo, we might have a winnable game at FedEx Field. We might have a winnable game when Washington comes to town. So try not to be naive right now. And we're going to do power rankings today at 1 o'clock. And I know people kind of get pissed or bummed when we do the power rankings lately, because the national view of this team is pretty low. But we asked the question last week, hey, the national view is really low. Are we too close to it that we don't see what they're seeing? And you go to Dallas and you can't score and you let a backup quarterback carve you up, kind of gives some validity.
But don't we always look for the national view to justify what we're dealing with?
We're going to dive into it. Last stand for the Commanders. Is this a must win? Code Burgundy. Don't go anywhere. It's B. Mitch and Finley. It's one of those intense rock songs right here.
Mm-hmm. That one, you got to go get your neck checked. I've been rocking your head so much.
I don't think must win is such a trite cliche anyway. I don't know that this is must win, because you've got another game 4 days later. But I know you cannot go 0-2 in your next two.
Yeah.
Because both are winnable. Neither team is great. Both have a better record than you, but neither team is great. You absolutely cannot go 0-2. And I think, frankly, that Thursday night on the road in Chicago, where the Bears have a pretty decent defense and, you know, they struggle to maybe move the ball, I worry about that game perhaps more than I do playing the Titans at home.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go 0-2 in this stretch and think you – if you go 0-2 in this stretch and you're 1-5 – and I know last year they got to 2-6, right? Like, I'm cognizant of that. And you can fight back from it. I know all that. Like, I remind myself, and hopefully the folks that listen to us know that we remind them, nothing's over till it's over in the NFL. But you get to 1-5, and I think you got real questions about the longevity of anything out here that ain't nailed down.
But I think if you go 1-4, you go 1-5, you go 2-6, you're put yourself now in a position where you got to be damn near perfect to finish things out. And I think that with the injuries that are happening and they're popping up in certain ways, and, you know, those type of things, I think makes things a little bit more difficult. And yes, we can say, yeah, anything is possible. But if you had to put money on it, you think it's guaranteed if you're sitting there 1-5, 1-4, that you're going to do what you want to do?
The numbers are you know, heavily, it's like, I know, stacked people, against you.
We'd like to say what's possible. Yeah. You look at anything, a perfect situation, anything is possible. But when we narrow it down to what we see, do we think that's possible?
Well, think about – I mean, let's add this little wrinkle. Jahan Dotson has a hamstring injury.
Mm-hmm.
you got a young rookie with serious speed, serious ability. They're saying a week, maybe two, maybe zero, but a week or maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't play Sunday, I don't see a scenario where he plays Thursday.
Now
right?
You're thinking about it in a sensible way, because if he can't play Sunday, then you're thinking about short week. You don't want to rush it for Thursday when it could end up being Thursday could turn into 3-4 weeks. You know what I mean? So
totally.
I think it's a lot of things that go into
soft tissue. You cannot rush. Period. Yeah. Especially soft tissue on a speed guy.
I just still had a conversation with Blaine Bishop, who's going to be on the show with us tomorrow. And yesterday he was talking about
everybody who Blaine is.
Blaine Bishop played safety for the Tennessee Titans. Also played in Philadelphia with me 1 year. 5'8", but he was a damn good player. Very, very smart. Will hit you. He reminded me of the guy from Indianapolis. Remember the shorter safety in Indianapolis? I think he won MVP 1 year. When Peyton was still there.
Yeah, Duke, I do remember.
Yeah, Duke can play. But we were talking about, like, the way things are today, and he was like, you know what? He said, I look at stuff sometimes. He's
Bob
like,
Sanders?
Yeah, Sanders. Yeah. And he said he judged everything based off of how he played. And I said, yeah, I know the rules have changed. I said, but still, you got to get ready to play football. And I said, a lot of coaches today are more concerned about getting their high-money players to the first week. But if you don't get prepared to play football, when you start going full speed, and I keep using the example of a car, eventually it happens. You know, you go get hurt. Like, even a NASCAR, which is not a human being, but nobody just shows up on Saturday and drive that car 200-300 miles without running it that amount of time during the week. You get what I'm saying? They know what the car can do. And I think that is something that we keep forgetting. Oh, yeah, we got to get them there. Yeah, but all of a sudden, if you haven't gone 100% and then now you have to do it against somebody that has, they better equip to handle it than you are. And he talked about Tennessee with a lot of injuries popping up on them. And we know they go a little harder than us. And they even get it. So you look at the first 2 weeks of the season, first 2-3 weeks, and look around the league and see how many injuries popped up. It's a hell of a lot of them.
I couldn't help but think of you this morning, B. I was on the bike watching SportsCenter. And did you see any of the Zion highlights from last night? I guess it was Pelicans-Bulls.
Well, I didn't see the highlights, but I did see they had like the season kickoff stuff. They were doing a lot of things with him last night. He looks good.
So he looks great. He looks explosive. And in my head, I'm like, this kid can't string together 25 games, and he's going this hard in the preseason. And then I flipped it around, and I was like, well, I guess he's got to go in the preseason to know he can go in the regular season. Now, the NBA is such a different 100%. Monster because it's 80 games, and they let everybody rest all the time anyway.
Yeah, but
it was just funny because I couldn't help but hear you. And I'm thinking of all sorts of men today. It's
yeah.
very
He's
very
not
bizarre.
A D-tackle anymore. Now he's a D-end. He's trimmed up a lot. Hopefully that works for him.
He still looked pretty thick. Not Jeff Walker thick, but thick.
When we return.
When we come back, Nikki Jabala, Washington Post, joins us. Don't go anywhere. It's B. Mitch Finley.